Hi, welcome to It's Child's Play with Diane and Bruna. It's our first new episode on a new platform. So we're starting right from the beginning and we hope to be able to upload weekly from here on in. We started up Child's Play when we wrote our journal here. It's an actionable, accountable and reflective journal for early years practitioners, playwork practitioners, anybody in the early years profession really. And we really signify journaling as being the key to our success over the last 3 years. But I want to take you right back to the beginning and talk to you a little bit today about one half of the podcast, which is me, and my background and how I came into childcare and really why I'm so passionate about quality, affordable childcare for parents and also providing a high level of care and early education for children and young people. So my name's Diane. I grew up in Armagh. I've got an older brother and a sister, and my mother was a nurse and my father worked in the civil service as well. Growing up, my brother and sister, who are slightly older than me, I'll not say what age for the podcast, but my mum had given up work, which would have been very traditional in the 60s. Let's just give it a decade. In the 60s, it would have been very traditional for mums to, once they were pregnant and had children, stay at home. And that was great. My brother and sister share the same work ethic as I do. My sister's principal of a primary school. My brother's an entrepreneur as well. He's a businessman. And almost a decade after my sister was born, my mum had gone back to work and fell pregnant with me and was determined she was going to go back to work or go into work. And I went to a childminder. I've had no adverse experiences of being a childminder, and equally my brother and sister, we all have grown up in the same household, the only difference being that I went to childcare and my brother and sister didn't. So we've had literally no difference in our upbringing, but both share a real work ethic and a drive. Went to primary school, had a very happy time in primary school. My post-primary education was slightly diverse. I went to grammar school for 2 years and then was moved out to a rural country school from third form to, they only went up to GCSE or the old O-level system as it was back then. And then I had to move on to do lower sixth and upper sixth in a college of further education, which was my option at that point. Again, I wonder if that has given me an added advantage. And sometimes I look at, I've had one child who's had one continuous post-primary experience and the other who has changed as well in third form. Again, I think that these experiences shape you into the person you become. So that hasn't had any detrimental effect to me whatsoever. The fact that I was at possibly five different schools by the time I reached 18, if you include my nursery school, but six if you include my childminder. So between not and 18, I had six different educational experiences. I did business and finance at university. Loved that. Did my year out actually working with the local council in Armagh, but come the May, after being in my year out, I went through the International Fund for Ireland. I went on an international placement to Peugeot, the car company. It was a fantastic experience. I went with 20 other people from Ireland, from all different walks and different career paths. Not all were doing business. In fact, some were only going into university at that time. And it was a wonderful experience for me. I really, really enjoyed it. I worked in the power tools part of Peugeot. And through that, through the personnel manager, a long story short, I met my husband. My husband Nikolai, hence the surname. His parents were of Russian descent. So Nikolai grew up in a family of four where grandparents also lived with him. They had left Russia after the revolution. So he was brought up in a very Russian household, but grew up and was educated in France. So Russian was his first language. And he only learned French whenever he went to school. So his early education is somewhat different from mine. He was brought up with two grandparents, you know, a mother and his grandparent at home, his grandmother. His three older siblings actually went to boarding school and Nikolai was kept at home being the baby. But we've both, again, grown up with very similar family values. When I went out to work for Peugeot, I came back, finished my degree and went out and spent a second summer over there working. And I came back to do a postgrad. And Nikolai at that point decided he was going to come to Ireland, take a career break and come to Ireland for a year. He worked in the Ulster Museum and absolutely fell in love with the people and fell in love with Ireland. And hence, 30 years later, he probably counts himself more Irish than French, but Russian will still get number one on his heart. So I came back and the intention was I actually got a job straight out of graduating, and I wanted to do a master's in admin and legal studies. So I worked initially with Cleaverfoot and Rankin, which I absolutely adored. I loved the company, loved everything it stood for, and got a great start to my working life working with them. I consider myself very lucky at the experiences that I had with that organisation. So I remained there for 7 years. During that time, I did my postgrad in legal studies, and I also did an MBA, which my thesis was in change management. So, you know, I loved the legal side, but kept getting drawn back into the business side. So hence I went into practice management with Cleaverfoot and Rankin. I had my first son, who's also Nikolai. It was a family name. My father-in-law was also Nikolai. And everything was good. And Nikolai went to daycare. I was very lucky, very fortunate. Nikolai had a great daycare experience. And that was fine. I actually moved career whenever Nikolai was just a few months old. I moved over to work PricewaterhouseCoopers. So you can calculate back the time, because I moved to PricewaterhouseCoopers the week that Pricewaterhouse and Coopers and Lybrand merged together. And I went into their liquidation department doing members voluntary liquidation. Again, enjoyed my time with it. Did I love it the same way as Cleaver's? I think I just joined there at the wrong time, to be perfectly honest. It was a time of change, of transition, and they were going through an upheaval, bringing two large organisations together. But hence, didn't not enjoy going in today. Never. I'm very, very lucky in my working career that I've ever dreaded going into work. I've always enjoyed work. I grew up with having a great work ethic in my household. My parents never complained about work. We were always all got part-time jobs from a very early age. I worked in Trueform shoes for any listeners out there who remember that, from the age of 14. And then I worked in the leisure centre as a lifeguard, believe it or not, throughout my whole university career. So I never ever have been lucky since the day and all I was 14 and out working. I've never not enjoyed going into work. So I moved from Pricewaterhouse, but an opportunity came up from Deloitte to go back into practice management side of things. So I went into practice management of the Deloitte branch in Belfast. Again, was very, very fortunate to go in at the right time and work with very, very dynamic people. And not too long after that, I was pregnant with my second child, Sasha. Circumstances changed whenever I had Sasha. Sasha wasn't very well. He was ever so slightly premature, but had a lot of breathing difficulties in early childhood. And at the same time, my mother was diagnosed as being terminally ill. So my job in Deloitte involved me going to Glasgow on regular occurrences. And Nikolai worked 7 days a week in the museum, and just depended on what was on in the education department in terms of what he had on. So we weren't the conventional family where work finished at 5 o'clock and we lived with the children from daycare and that was you Monday to Friday. That just wasn't our career. And I wasn't ready to stop working. Probably couldn't have financially afforded it. Most young working parents out there both need to work. And a very long story short, I remember jokingly saying to somebody one day, I could own a daycare with the amount of money it was going to cost me to put two children into daycare. So I empathise with working parents about the cost of childcare. Before I knew it, I was put in touch with somebody who had a daycare for sale. In fact, if I'm being perfectly honest, I'd actually looked at this daycare previously. It had been up for sale for a while and I'd toyed about it with it in the period of me leaving Pricewaterhouse and joining Deloitte's. And ironically, the day I went to look at it, I was actually offered a job in Deloitte. So I decided that was meant to be. But a couple of years on, I found myself in the circumstances that I was in. So we had no family support in Northern Ireland. My mum wasn't well. Nikolai's mother and father were living in France. My dad was elderly. So I just didn't have family that I could rely on. And they were living in Armagh. So it was Nikolai and I. And we looked around at that time to try and get good registered childcare. But again, there were just so many restrictions. So in a whim, we bought the day nursery. When Sasha was just 12 weeks old, I went into nursery and the first person I handed him over to was Brona, the co-author of my book, by the way. And I just knew Brona was someone special from the day and hour that I handed Sasha over to her. She was a very dynamic person. She had left school at 16. Brona will tell you her story next week. But she had worked her way up through. That was just the career path that she fell into. But was mega good at her job, was very confident. I could see leadership skills from day one. There were two people, actually. I was very lucky. Nikolai was just in preschool. He didn't actually go to nursery school. He stayed in daycare with me. And then we decided to put the boys into school near the Ulster Museum where Nikolai worked, because he could drop them off in the morning and the particular school we had chosen, which I'd hoped that Nikolai actually would remain in that school from primary one up to 18. But as I said earlier, he changed schools by choice in fourth form. But we'll maybe do a podcast on that one day about why I'm very, very passionate about empowering children and young people through experiences he had had through school. But that's an episode for another day. So that was the plan. So that worked well for Nikolai. I bought the nursery in the December. In the September, Nikolai started primary one. His dad dropped him into school and he went after school's care there every day. And the first summer he came to us, he didn't enjoy it as much as the after schools that he had in school. And I kind of wondered, I just kind of thought maybe he didn't know the children as well. I was very proud of the changes that we were making quickly in the day nursery, which I'd bought. But I could kind of see by the second year that children really, at the end of P2, P3, there was that kind of pattern where children wouldn't come back to us in September, maybe possibly going into P3 or P4. So I wanted to know, obviously, I was passionate about what I was doing. I was making a lot of changes. The daycare itself was flying. It was working really, really well. I had built up morale in the team. I changed management in the team. We invested a lot in CPD of our staff, which had been lacking under the previous owner. I've never worked as hard in my life as I did in the first 2 years setting up that nursery. Well, I probably work harder now, but in terms of the previous experience, I invested my heart and my soul into the running of that nursery through very challenging times, you know, in my own family life. Unfortunately, during that period of time, I lost my mum and my husband lost his dad very suddenly. So we had a challenging first 2 years, and we just, I suppose, Nicola and I threw our heart and soul into running the organisation, and Nikolai came out to help me actually following the loss of his dad. He also took a career break, and this is when we started really looking at wraparound care. So Nikolai and Brona set up our first wraparound care facilities. We knew that bringing children back into a very small daycare environment wasn't meeting the needs of our children. We had looked around at various models. We looked at the model in the school that my oldest boy was at, slightly alarmed, because there was great facilities there for him. They literally had the run of the school when school was closed. It was run really ad hoc. We work on a ratio of 1 to 8 in our daycare. In the school, they weren't registered and regulated, so it just wasn't managed as tightly as what I would have liked when I went in to see it. But I understood that the space was there. There was no transition at the end of the school day. The staff were passionate about what they were doing and the kids were having fun. It was an extension of the school day, but it really wasn't like school. And I wanted that to work. So Nikolai and Brona set up our very first wraparound unit off-site. It wasn't linked to a school. So when I say wraparound unit, it wasn't technically, it was an after-school club. And we did that for about a couple of years. And I decided one day, look, I'm going to write out to schools. I think this is something that we could drive down childcare costs. Schools could gain an income. And this is best meeting the needs of school-aged children. I could see through doing playwork qualifications during my, you know, initial few years, I started off, for me, with having no qualifications. I went in and I did my early childhood level 3. It was CCLD back then. And Helen Minford was my lecturer. She gave me a drive and a passion. She was just enthusiastic about what stage I was in my career, why I was doing what I was doing. And she was very interested. And I just thoroughly enjoyed my level 3 qualifications with her. I loved it. Through her, I met Peter McCartney, and through Peter, I learned to love play work. Anybody who's ever worked with Peter McCartney in Northern Ireland, they will know what I mean when I say he's very, very dynamic in his field. So I knew that play work was the right qualification for our school age children to have, which Brona and Nikolai then did. And we could see that was working. So we rode out to schools, and over the period of 10 years, we were in 14 schools. We opened every year, we opened one, opened two, and we never opened the next one until the established ones were working really well. And it was really word of mouth through principals. We did speak at one Employers for Childcare conference, and we got a lot of inquiries out of that, but we were very systematic. The most we opened in 1 year was three, and that was tough going. So every year we opened a couple. Our very first one, actually a couple have closed since, our very first one was Newton Breda Primary. And that school closed due to falling numbers, but the day and army closed, we still had a full unit of 16 children in there. But you know, things always move on for the best. It's a lovely new men cap building. The school closed because of falling numbers, but on that site there's a beautiful new men cap building, and it fills my heart with joy that there's after schools provision for those children in that school, run by them. And there have been another couple that have closed due to falling numbers, but Sleepy Hollow was always thrive through that period. So this year in September, we will be opening two new facilities, one in Dunmurry, one in Lisburn, and then we're going all Ireland by opening our first unit in Swords at the end of October. We have a really good management team. We have a staff of over 100. We have managers in every unit. We have two managers in our day nursery. We have heads of admin. We have an area manager, regional manager, bookkeeper, Brona, myself, Nikolai, all working in the company. We've actually just secured a new head office site. There's a lot. I'm packing a lot into this quick episode, but I think I wanted to give you the reason why I'm passionate about affordable quality childcare. And it goes beyond just Sleepy Hollow and just our organisation. We invest a lot of our time into doing work that's going to improve our sector in Northern Ireland. So whether that's me chairing the Employers Forum, I have chaired the Daycare Owners Forum, I've sat on the Board of Governors of a primary school, still sit on the Board of Governors of a primary school, in fact, the Board of Directors of Early Years, the Organisation for Children and Young People, I've sat on the Board of Directors of Playboard Northern Ireland. I've sat in the Playwork Education and Training Council in Northern Ireland. We work alongside leading UK organisations such as the Curiosity Approach. And Brona and I have written this book. I mean, we couldn't keep going at the pace we're going if we weren't setting ourselves smart goals. So specific, measurable, achievable, realistic and time-specific goals. So the purpose of our podcast is to share our journaling experiences with you, to be very open and honest on our platform and share ideas, but also hopefully to be accountability partners with you all. My book has just been signed. Anybody who I meet who's dynamic has signed my book. Stephanie and Lindsay from the Curiosity Approach and Jeffrey Archer, who I met very recently. But our book tells you a little bit about Brona and myself. It tells you a little bit about our ethos, the ethoses that we follow, Reggio Emilia in our early childhood centre, the play work types and play principles, the curiosity approach, which we follow as well. It also tells you about how we journal for sustainability. So we start off every week with a weekly affirmation. And we set goals. We set three goals for ourselves every single day. We write down whether we've achieved our goals or not, and if not, we carry them forward to the next day. There's emerging ideas as the next session or planning that comes out of our week that we've had, and it's down from Monday to Friday on several columns. Then we look at this week's moments of reflection. Was it a good week? Was it challenging? What did we enjoy, not enjoy? I don't want to go through all of this because obviously I hope that you're going to be buying a journal and journaling along with us, and it's something that we will be covering in future episodes. So and then at the end of the month, at the end of every month, we look at our eco planning. So I fill in there every week about, you know, what have we reduced, what have we reused, recycled, repaired, how have we respected, how did we reflect, and how will we eco plan for next month? But the thing that we aren't very good at doing as practitioners, especially owners in Northern Ireland, we're not very good about sharing our successes. So I print out a few photographs at the end of every month into my journal about, so I can see visually, look, what have our highlights been this month? What have we achieved? And I also record my moments of reflection for the month. And one of our little quotes there is, the more reflective you are, the more effective you are. So it's really, you know, what have I enjoyed this month? How have I shared that? Give me three things that you've enjoyed this month. And really, that kind of sets you up for the month ahead. So one of the things we hope to do in our podcast is, Bona and I are going to podcast weekly about our journal, what we've done, share a little bit of experiences, or maybe reminisce about things that we've done over the previous few months or years, or have a bit of a laugh with you with maybe any things that have cropped up that week that we feel we can share without breaking too much confidentiality for anyone. So look, I hope that you will be inspired to journal alongside with us. I hope you'll be inspired even just to reach out if you're not journaling, as owners and practitioners, so that we can kind of all come together to help shape our sector. It's very, very important to me that we're seen as a professional sector. The people who work for me are playwork professionals, early childhood professionals. In fact, we're very much on the verge of calling our early childhood staff early childhood teachers, because they are teaching children and young people in the very formative years of their lives. If you look at the UNICEF research, they're saying that the first 1,000 days of a child's life is key and crucial. And I really think to call our childcare providers, you know, assistants, nursery nurses, it's just not giving them the correct title and professionalising our sector. So all of those things that I've talked about earlier about giving back into our sector is to shape our sector, to ensure that we're lobbying, to see that we're recognised as being key drivers in our local economy. If we don't continue to push for quality, affordable childcare and a childcare strategy, then our parents are not going to be able to afford to stay in work. We need to lobby so that we can drive down the cost of childcare. We want to work more in partnership in schools, because that drives down our childcare overheads and costs, so that we can continue to provide quality, affordable childcare. And ultimately, we want to be providing corporate childcare into busy businesses for our 0-5s, again, driving down the cost using the same model as we're using in after schools. So in Sleepy Hollow, we're very busy providing care, quality care, good employment opportunities for our staff, but we also know that it's our responsibility to look further afield as to what's going to be happening in our sector in the next 5, 10, 15 and 20 years, and how we can take our responsibility as directors of a busy company to make sure that we're shaping that for the hundreds and hundreds of parents who are out there busy working and struggling with the cost of childcare, when that's our ultimate aim, is to drive down the cost of childcare while keeping quality and affordability at the heart of everything we do. So we will not be content until we see a very good childcare strategy in place, and until we can work in partnership with leading schools and organisations who are willing to work in partnership to provide that for the parents who either use their schools or working parents who they employ. So thanks very much, and hopefully you've enjoyed this introductory experience in A Child's Play with me, Diane.